Hey, friends, welcome back to Anti-Visions. Well, I just want to share a picture of what really happens and what potentially can happen with this whole data harvesting that I've been talking about and surveillance capitalism. And it's the kind of data that's collected through our everyday, whether we're using Gmail or we're just walking along and the pedometer and our phone is tracking where we're going. All of the ways that we are digitally tracked and all of that information, how it's harvested and used. So there's some great pictures of the technology that's already available and being developed. And one place that I want to read from is Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow by Yuval Harari. And it's really not about data harvesting so much as about artificial intelligence and the future of humanity altogether. It's quite a book, but he has some parts here that I thought were relevant. I like to share the wealth, share the knowledge, especially for my friends that don't quite have the time to dig in to some of these books. So I thought you might appreciate some of this. He says on page 348, he says, today in the U.S., more people read digital books than printed ones. Devices such as Amazon's Kindle are able to collect data on their users while they are reading. Your Kindle can, for example, monitor which parts of a book you read quickly and which slowly, on which page you took a break, and on which sentence you abandoned the book, never to pick it up again. Better tell the author to rewrite that bit. If Kindle is upgraded with face recognition and biometric sensors, it will know how each sentence you read influenced your heart rate and blood pressure. It will know what made you laugh, what made you sad, and what made you angry. Soon, books will read you while you are reading them. And whereas you quickly forget most of what you read, Amazon will never forget a thing. Such data will enable Amazon to choose books for you with uncanny precision. It will also enable Amazon to know exactly who you are and how to turn you on and off. So this really reminds me of even something that Shoshana Zuboff talks about in her book, which is how Mark Zuckerberg, he imagines a day when Facebook knows every book you've ever read, every song you've ever listened to, every post you've ever posted. And that might really not bother you until you begin to realize how this information is being used, could potentially be used, how it's reinvested, and some of the really eerie things that could potentially happen. And honestly, some of the examples I'm giving are minimal compared to some of the tactics that I talked about even in the last episode about Chinese surveillance and how that can be used against us. So here on page 347, Yuval talks about, again, in the book Homo Deus, he's talking about Microsoft and how they're developing a very sophisticated system called Cortana, named after an AI character in its popular Halo video game series. Cortana is an AI personal assistant that Microsoft hopes to include as an integral feature of future versions of Windows. Users will be encouraged to allow Cortana access to all their files, emails, and applications so that it will get to know them and can thereby offer advice on myriad matters, as well as becoming a virtual agent representing the user's interests. This kind of reminds me, honestly, of that movie Her that came out several years ago, how there was this really powerful AI assistant and people would actually fall in love with their AI assistant. This just really reminds me of it. So I'm going to keep reading though. Cortana could remind you to buy something for your wife's birthday, select the present, reserve a table at a restaurant, and prompt you to take your medicine an hour before dinner. It could alert you that if you don't stop reading now, you will be late for an important business meeting. As you are about to enter the meeting, Cortana will warn you that your blood pressure is too high and your dopamine level too low. And based on past statistics, you tend to make serious business mistakes in such circumstances, so you had better keep things tentative and avoid committing yourself or signing any deals. Once Cortanas evolve from oracles to agents, they might start speaking directly with one another on their master's behalf. It can begin innocently enough, with my Cortana contacting your Cortana to agree on a place and time for a meeting. Next thing I know, a potential employer will tell me not to bother sending a CV, but simply allow his Cortana to grill my Cortana. Or my Cortana may be approached by the Cortana of a potential lover, and the two will compare notes to decide whether it's a good match, completely unbeknown to their human owners. As Cortanas gain authority, they may begin manipulating each other to further the interests of their masters, so that success in the job market or the marriage market may increasingly depend on the quality of your Cortana. Rich people owning the most up-to-date Cortana will have a decisive advantage over poor people with their older versions. But it gets even better, because in another section, he talks about the power of the algorithms, like the algorithms that run Google and Google Search or Facebook, or all these algorithms that actually get to know who we are. Not that they're sentient, but because they have so much harvested data about us, they're able to actually know us better than we know ourselves, supposedly. But he argues certainly better than maybe your wife might know you or your friends might know you. Which lead to the ideas like, well, what about voting? What about big decisions like who you're going to marry? And basically the argument is that we should give our decision-making over to these algorithms. So here he gives an example on page 344 of, like, say you've been, he says the prime minister, but let's pretend the president. You've been complaining about the president and whatever political party, you know, the whole 4 years, right? But then, you know, the morning of the election, you wake up with a cold and you're not thinking the same, and then some weird scandal happens and you hear about it as you're driving to the election thing, and boom, next thing you know, you vote for the very party or people that all along you were saying you weren't going to vote for, which we know people are pretty fickle, and that's very plausible. So he says here, I could have saved myself from such a fate if only I had authorized Google to vote for me. Google wasn't born yesterday, you know. Though it won't ignore the recent tax cuts and the election promises, it will also remember what happened throughout the previous 4 years. It will know what my blood pressure was every time I read the morning newspapers and how my dopamine level plummeted while I watched the evening news. Google will know how to screen the spin doctor's empty slogans. Google will understand that illness makes voters lean a bit more to the right than usual and will compensate for this. Google will therefore be able to vote not according to my momentary state of mind and not according to the fantasies of the narrating self, but rather according to the real feelings and interests of the collection of biochemical algorithms known as I. Well, there's a lot to unpack there, but I will leave it to your imagination and reasoning for another day. But here he does go on and just give some proof, because you might think, hey, there's no way these algorithms really know us that well. That's not possible. So he says, a recent study commissioned by Google's nemesis, Facebook, has indicated that already today, the Facebook algorithm is a better judge of human personalities and dispositions than even people's friends, parents, and spouses. The study was conducted on 86,220 volunteers who have a Facebook account and who completed a 100-item personality questionnaire. The Facebook algorithm predicted the volunteers' answers based on monitoring their Facebook likes, which web pages, images, and clips they tagged with the like button. The more likes, the more accurate the predictions. The algorithm's predictions were compared with those of work colleagues, friends, family members, and spouses. Amazingly, the algorithm needed a set of only 10 likes in order to outperform the predictions of work colleagues. It needed 70 likes to outperform friends, 150 likes to outperform family members, and 300 likes to outperform spouses. In other words, if you happen to have clicked 300 likes on your Facebook account, the Facebook algorithm can predict your opinions and desires better than your husband or wife. A few paragraphs later, he concedes that there are some sinister possibilities, like in the same study, it implied that in future U.S. presidential elections, Facebook could know not only the political opinions of tens of millions of Americans, but also who among them are the critical swing voters and how these voters might be swung. Facebook could tell that in Oklahoma, the race between Republicans and Democrats is particularly close. Identify the 32,417 voters who still haven't made up their minds and determine what each candidate needs to say in order to tip the balance. How could Facebook obtain this priceless political data? Well, we provide it for free, obviously. Now, this is not something that Facebook will be able to do. This is something that Facebook is already capable of doing. And if we actually believe that the likes of Facebook and Twitter and Google are not actually intervening in our elections or swaying our elections, well, I guess you don't have to believe that. But it's funny because they'll point the finger at Russia and say that a few ads from bots that came out of Russia swayed the elections. When Facebook, we know very clearly Mark Zuckerberg's political leanings, how radically he supports a particular party, and how many people that work for him support that particular party. And if you have a different political persuasion, you better not let anybody know it. And so to think that they have that kind of technology and wouldn't use it is really, I mean, for me, is hard to believe. Either way, theoretically, they haven't used it that way, so they claim, but the point is they potentially could. Okay, now let me throw in one more example for fun. This one is a little bit more dystopian. It is a present day reality. We definitely have the technology here in the States, but this is an example from China. So it connects to what I talked about last time with Chinese surveillance and their surveillance system, but also the way that they use cameras and facial recognition, which is a technology that is flooding into the US right now. One that actually was really developed here, but now is being used. So even now there's talk about the IRS is going to require everybody to give a facial upload when they upload their taxes this year. Now, whether it pans out like that, I know that there's still a lot of talk behind the scenes within the government. They want to use facial recognition. It really was kind of exposed during the January 6th riot because that's how they were tracking people down, was using facial recognition. So here's an example from Patrick Wood, who writes Technocracy News and Trends. And he said, a challenge experiment was just conducted in Guiyang, China, to see how long it would take to locate and capture a BBC reporter who was mixed in at random with the general population of 3.5 million people. After the police snapped his picture and fed it into the massive facial recognition database, which contains the facial image of every Guiyang resident, the reporter took off. They gave him a head start as he mingled in on the crowded city streets. Then, a request for his apprehension was given to the computer equipped with the latest AI security software. The AI software combed through millions of images from tens of thousands of cameras in Guiyang, all transmitted back to the master computer hunting for the reporter. The results were shocking. It took a total of 7 minutes before police physically apprehended him. That's physically apprehended him. Assuming it took a few minutes for police to assemble and walk or run to his location, the actual identification could have taken as little as 2 minutes. Yes, just 2 minutes to find a single subject in a city of 3.5 million people. Yin Jun, executive with surveillance camera manufacturer Dahua Technology, stated, "We can match every face with an ID card and trace all your movements back 1 week in time. We can match your face with your car, match you with your relatives, and the people you're in touch with. With enough cameras, we can know who you frequently meet." Well, so that's more the Orwellian angle. And those are just some examples that I thought you might find interesting, a little bit entertaining, and at least slightly disturbing. Okay, friends. Well, I'll see you next time on Anti-Visions. Mm-hmm.